thousand tales. We're master you in luck, cause up your sleeve, you got a brand of magic never fail. You got some power in your corner now, some heavy ammunition in your camp. You got some punch, pizzazz, yahoo and hell. See, all you gotta do is rub that lamp, and I'll say,
Mr. Aladdin, sir,
what
will your pleasure be?
Let me take your order, shout it down. You ain't never had a friend like me, now, now.
Someone certainly got their three wishes granted when Aladdin opened at the New Amsterdam Theater. A rave review in the New York Times, stardom for Genie James Monroe Iglehart, and another blockbuster hit for the Disney theatrical group. But the road to Broadway's success wasn't always smooth. It took 3 years, two out-of-town tryouts, and several regional productions with multiple writes and rewrites along the way to make this show work. Joining me now to discuss that transformation are Tom Schumacher, president of Disney Theatrical Productions, and the man with the magic himself, James Monroe Iglehart, who plays the genie. Welcome to our show.
Thank you.
Tom is the president of Disney Theatrical Group. How involved are you in deciding which Disney movies get turned into musicals?
To my great good fortune, I'm the one who puts all these ideas forward. So I was there when we gave birth to Disney Theatrical 20 years ago. And
you were doing movies at first?
Yeah, I was a theater kid. I grew up. In fact, we grew up in the same area, James and I did. But yeah. I grew up doing theater, and then Disney recruited me to make an animated movie called The Rescuers Down Under as a producer. I eventually ran Disney Animation, and while doing that, Peter Schneider and I, another executive at Disney, were asked to turn what was Beauty and the Beast into a business for Disney.
So, but had you also worked on Aladdin when you were in the movie?
When I arrived at Disney about 26 and a half years ago, Aladdin was in its earliest stages of production.
What makes a movie a good candidate for an adaptation?
It's a very curious mix of things. Of course, Lion King has been very successful. Beauty was very successful. We've done things that weren't movies as well. But it has to have something theatrical in its DNA. And it's why James is here, and it's why James is so sensational in the show, because Howard Ashman, the late lyricist and conceiver of this production of Aladdin as a movie, created this character that was highly theatrical for the genie. It was later a filmic shapeshifter, but the theater idea was in it from the very beginning.
What are the pros and cons of Aladdin as a potential candidate?
What do you mean?
Well, you know, it's gone through a difficult transition, so there must have been some difficulties in the start, or is it just because an animated film can do certain things that real humans can't do?
Well, the trick of – and, of course, this whole question of how a movie becomes a piece of theater. Don't forget, inside of these things is the music. We're not adapting films into musicals. We're taking musical films and bringing them to the stage. This character of the genie was a shapeshifter that Eric Goldberg animated. But James is what the original concept was.
James, how old were you when you first saw the movie version of Aladdin?
I was 17 years old.
Is it true that you told your mother that you wanted to play the genie even then?
Yeah.
And what was her reaction?
You know what? She was very supportive of everything. She would always look at me and she would never say, no, you can't do anything. I said, Mom, I really want to do something like that. I would love to play a character like the genie. I would love to play a genie. And she said, well, you know, you never know. Crazier things have happened. And I'm not saying you can't, but if you do, you have to work really hard to work for Disney. And it's kind of funny because here I am.
What was it that you identified with in the part?
Two things. One, I am a, you know, self-proclaimed Disney nerd, and Disney magic just is an amazing thing to me. Since I was a kid, all of their films, I just love them all. But as far as the genie was concerned, I'm a huge fan of stand-up comedy, and Robin Williams was one of my top five stand-up comedies that I love. And I went to see it because, one, the two guys, Howard Ashman and Alan Menken, who wrote Little Shop of Horrors, wrote this film. And two, it was a Disney film. And three, Robin Williams. So I went to go see it because of that.
Well, there are a number of things I have to deal with in what you just said. Well, first of all, as Tom mentioned, Alan Menken and Howard Ashman had a concept for the genie, which was really far from what wound up in the film. It was something between Cab Calloway and Fats Waller. Mm-hmm. And so you've returned this part to the original conception.
It's a wonderful honor to be able to do that. And when I found out about that, it kind of freed me up a little bit because it let me know I didn't have to step into the shoes of a legendary, you know, comedian like Robin Williams. I could go my own way. And as far as Fats Waller's concerned, I had done many productions of Ain't Misbehavin'. So I had kind of done my – and as a director of the show and also being in the show, I had done my research on Fats Waller. So I just started doing research on the style and the swagger of Cab Calloway.
So it wasn't all that difficult making this part your own when people are so identified with Robin Williams and improv that he did?
The great thing about Disney Theatrical Group, Thomas Schumacher, Casey Nicola, our wonderful director, was they were really nice in sheltering me away from all of that other stuff. They basically just said, look, do what you do, and we'll take care of everything
else.
But
you were nervous about it.
Oh, I was petrified. I was petrified.
Well, Tom, was casting Jeannie seen as one of the big challenges in bringing the show to the stage?
I think there's an irony to this, which is that everybody said the two things that would be impossible to do in a stage version of Aladdin were the genie and the flying carpet.
Yes.
I'm going to argue these are two things we nailed perfectly. It was everything else that was so darn hard. But the very first night...
But wait, Tom, I have to tell you, I did a talk back after one of the shows with a lot of people in the audience remaining to see James and others. And when I asked how did the flying carpet, how was that worked out, nobody was willing to give me the answer. Is this a trade secret?
Okay, let me handle that one. It's not just a trade secret. There are certain things that make Disney Disney. And the bibbidi-bobbidi-boo that gives Cinderella her dress, you don't explain how it happens, it just happens. So we can't explain how the magic carpet happens, it just happens. You don't want to take the magic away, so when the fans come and see it, it's magic from the beginning and to the end.
That's my answer, too.
And then, Tom, you didn't know that there was someone perfect for the role who had grown up dreaming of playing the part, waiting in the wings, somebody who was actually collecting Aladdin memorabilia on the side.
No, we didn't. I'd seen James, of course. I'd seen James in Putnam County Spelling Bee and in Memphis, and we knew who he was. But when he came in, he was the embodiment of the character. But that's how we were seeing it. And the thing that happened at the first performance of the out-of-town, you know, sort of first try in Seattle, I remember how nervous you were,
yeah.
James was, the first time. He said, will this audience reject me when I show
up? I remember that. Because you know people are expecting the film. And we were going in the original style. We were going in a different direction. And... to this day, I still get nervous until the light hits. Once the light hits, the performer comes on. And I remember I looked at Tom and I was like, I hope this works. And then once I came out, I was like, you know what? It's time to do my job. It's time to do what I love to do. And once the spotlight hit, I was gone. And I didn't really wake up until the end of Friend Like Me. And I was like, they're cheering. Okay, we got it.
Well, that winds up being the showstopper. But was it did it have all the magic and all the other things from the start, or is this something
it's
that
always
grew?
Casey always had a great concept for Friend Like Me. The one fabulous thing about the cartoon was that he was a filmic shapeshifter, and he could take his head off and juggle with it or change things around or turn himself into a big, you know, pink dragon. Where with this one, we had to make a number that got bigger and bigger and bigger, and to just hit all those wonderful spaces in your soul that you love about Broadway. And it was always a great number, but from Seattle to Broadway, it just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
The fireworks were added somewhere along the line.
You know, that was like the icing on the little sprinkles on an already good cupcake.
Well, it would seem to me that when you talked about making this part your own, Robin Williams did I can't even call it dialogue, they're more like rants, that he totally improvised to the point where there was a problem on who was going to get screenwriting credits. you were working from a script.
I was working from a script, but the fun part was Chad Beglin, who was our wonderful and Tony-nominated book writer, wrote some amazing, amazing lines. But he and Casey also gave me the freedom to play in rehearsals. Casey said, just go. And if we like something, we'll keep it. And if we don't, we don't. I've said some things I thought were great. And then they've come back and like, that's awesome. And then we hear from the higher-ups, you probably can't say that. So we would go back and, you know, fix things. But they did give me freedom. Some of the lines that I created are still in the show, but it's mostly Chad Beglin.
But you have it all over Robin Williams as a song and dance band.
Well... I'll let other people say that.
No, well, some of the dancing came late. You just learned.
Yeah, I learned.
You had to learn how to tap. You and also the young man who plays Aladdin.
Oh, Mr. Adam Jacobs, my partner in crime. Yes, definitely.
Had to learn because the director, choreographer Casey Nicola, insisted that you tap dance?
It's not insisted. It's just I think every director has a trademark. I think Casey's trademark is light and big and brash, but he also his trademark is tap dancing. Every show he's done, he's got tap dancing in it.
Well, Tom, Adam Jacobs looks like the guy in the movie. When he walked into your office, Did you say, oh, my God, he could have been the model for the cartoon character?
Well, it's funny because Adam was actually working for us at the time. He was Simba in The Lion King. He had done the national tour, and he played Simba on Broadway. So we had known Adam, and he's, of course, so perfect for it. But he's grown so much as the role has
yes.
The role has gotten so much richer than it was originally, and he's grown with it in the same way that James's role just kept changing and changing and changing during this long process.
Well, do you think that part of the successful changes are the result of hiring Casey Nicolau as the director and choreographer? He also did The Book of Mormon, which is a very different kind of show. The only thing that they probably have in common is that they both come out of animation, but very different kinds of animation. And there are the language issues. This Aladdin is very family-friendly.
Well, certainly you expect it.
Book of Mormon, they have a sign that says... warning the audience over about language content.
That's really never been our signature
in
a show. But, you know, Casey, what Casey is tireless and fearless. Casey will try anything and he'll keep doing it. And that's why he's so great for this material. And he kept inventing and reinventing. But you'll also, when you look at Aladdin and Jasmine, they're older than they were in the movie, right?
Yes.
They have real issues to deal with, and I think it allows the full audience. It's why it's such a hit show from a date night experience, because they're legitimate adults going through this.
Now, I mentioned that the show was very different when it was first produced in 2011 in Seattle. With pretty much the same cast, James?
Actually, yes. That's also a rare thing for a producer and for the creative team to decide to keep the original cast they put together. And Adam Jacobs, Courtney Reed, Jonathan Freeman, Don Darrow Rivera, Brian Gonzalez, Brandon O'Neill, and actually myself, we are all from the original. And four of our ensemble members are actually from the Seattle cast.
And Jonathan Freeman actually was Jafar
voice
of Jafar in the film, so he goes back even further.
And he's done, this is his fourth Disney show on Broadway.
Yeah.
But what was the problem with the original production? It didn't get good reviews in Seattle, go over very well with the audience. It had many of the same songs, it had this great cast.
I wouldn't say it didn't go over very well with the audience. The audiences liked the show a lot. The critics had issues with it, and there were some issues fundamentally with the way we were putting it together. But every time we've stepped out, the audiences, whether it be in Seattle, Toronto, and definitely New York, have always liked it. But critically, they've had issues with it. But our creative team and Tom
fixed it. I think there was a question about how you enter into the story, but this is not new to us, right? I mean, this is my life. I study everybody else's show, too. The shows that get rewritten, shows that didn't make sense until you change the opening number, shows...
And that's what happened here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, the opening number was more like what it was in the movie, and Genie didn't show up until he had to. So a decision was made somewhere down the line to have the Genie open the show.
We actually had a very different narrative device in the show in Toronto. And at the sort of late in the run, Casey had a concept that we couldn't put in up there and didn't even tell the cast.
No.
We were already back here in New York rewriting. So Chad was working. Everyone was working to reshape the show. And then we came into New York. We had rehearsal time set aside for that, and we went right back into work.
Well, everybody was working at other jobs in the interim, weren't they?
To a certain extent, yes. I mean, once we left Toronto, everybody kind of took little jobs that we knew we could get out of just in case Aladdin called. So we were all like just kind of waiting.
Now, Tom, the movie had four songs. Four songs are not a Broadway musical make. So were songs being added all along?
Well, of course, what we had, which was a great luxury, is we had these anchor songs from the movie that everyone knows. But we also had a handful of trunk songs that had been cut from the movie, like the fantastic song Proud of Your Boy, which becomes a big spine in the show. That was one of Howard Ashman's really glorious songs with Alan Menken. We were able to bring those back in. And then Chad Beglin and Alan together wrote four brand new songs.
Now, Tom, you've written a book called How Does the Show Go On? I checked with Amazon. The average rating it gets is 5 stars, which puts it ahead of Ulysses, which only gets 4 stars. Gone with the Wind gets 4.5 stars.
Go figure.
Either you have a lot of friends or – have you read the book, James?
I have read pieces of the book, yes, because as a director, you know, you want to read the best theater books out there, and that's definitely one of them.
So that gives advice? Is that
he tells the story of how to build a show. He has anecdotes because no one tells a story better than Tom. And it also just kind of, as a theater person and as a novice, you can come in and see how a show is actually built.
Now, one more thing. The New Amsterdam Theater, it's owned by Disney now?
Yeah, we have what's a 100-year lease. But, yeah, we paid for this massive renovation. So that's our theater to run, yes.
And you have – it's where you started The Lion King, Mary Poppins, and many others. But it's 101 years old, and it was the home of the Ziegfeld Follies, mm-hmm. And people like Fanny Brice, Will Rogers, Eddie Cantor, Marilyn Miller, W.C. Fields, and Burt Williams
yes.
All appeared on the stage. Mm-hmm. Is that significant to a performer?
Yes. Yes. So when you walk into a theater and you realize that legend stepped on that stage, and now you've got the honor to step on this stage, it kind of gives you this badge and that basically says, look, you've got to be that good as well. You know, you've got to live up to those names that have been there before you. And it's a wonderful challenge to live up to it every night so that when you're gone, someone will say W.C. Fields, Fanny Brice, you know, Burt Williams, James Monroe Iglehart, Adam Jacobs. So people will say that.
Well, you said that Burt Williams was particularly relevant to you.
Very important to me. He was the first black actor to be with the Ziegfeld Follies. And on that stage, and now I get to be on that stage, too.
Now, we're going to go out with the opening, which was added later. How did yes. you find out that you were doing it?
It was really cool, secret James Bond type of stuff. They gave me this little manila folder.
Oh, we're going to do Proud of Your Boy. I'm sorry. But tell us how did you...
They gave me this manila folder that said, do not open until you get into the cab. I got into the cab, and there was another folder that said, do not open until you get to the airport. So I got to the airport, and when I opened up that folder, it said, are you sure you really want to read this? And then I opened that one up, and it was just the music. It was just the music, and it said Arabian Nights, and I teared up, and I called Casey, and I said, thank you. I can't. Are you sure you want me to do this? He was like, no, I want you to do this. I think it'll be great. And what was funny was that when I was in Toronto, Tom said, you know, we've got something special for you. So tell me what it is. He goes, I can't. And literally walked away.
And
so
they,
I was like, okay.
It had to be secret because other people were performing
yes.
the opening and didn't want to disappoint them.
We also didn't want to disrupt the show. We were doing the show at the time.
My great thanks to James Monroe Iglehart, who plays Genie in the hit show Aladdin, now at the New Amsterdam Theater on 42nd Street, just off of 7th Avenue. And to Thomas Schumacher, who's president of Disney Theatrical Productions. And here's Proud of Your Boy. Thank you both so much.
Thank you very much.
Water flows under the bridge. Let it pass. Let it go.